You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G. D-O-D-G-E-R-S-T.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential. With me, as always, is Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Hey, Vince, how the heck are you?
I am doing well. You listeners should be proud because a lot of the other Locked On are taking the day off, but we don't do that over here.
No. Partly because, you know, neither of us have jobs or anything. Memorial Day is just like any other day for us right now, you know?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Today we are going to talk about the Dodgers sweep of the Pirates over the weekend. Specifically, we want to talk about a couple key at-bats on Saturday and Sunday that kind of turned those games. We'll touch on Jock Peterson's lack of hustle, and then we will talk a little bit about the left-handed reliever situation and the uncertainty around that and possible ways to add some certainty to it. But first, we wanted to let you know that today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. We've talked to you last week about Hotels.com. I still recommend it. If you haven't tried it, you really should. If you ever book hotels, hotels.com is the smart way to do it because there's no downside to it. There's plenty of upside, including better prices and rewards like free nights. So if you book hotels, go to hotels.com and check it out. We also want to remind you to subscribe to Locked On Dodgers in your podcast app of choice. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. So the Dodgers swept the Pirates. They scored, I think the technical term for the number of runs they scored is a crap load. What were your thoughts on the weekend, Vince?
You know, this weekend was just another notch on the Dodgers' belt in terms of offense, in terms of what they can do and how they do it. And I know we're going to highlight a couple of at-bats that led to that. And you know, the Dodgers basically just, we talked about it before, is, you know, get the starting pitcher out of the game. That's their main goal. And whether that's by scoring a lot of runs or just by making them throw a lot of pitches or a combination of both. And that's what they did this weekend. And I know that you had a couple of at-bats that we want to talk about. And then I got a few numbers that we can get into after that.
Yeah. So first let's talk about the one at-bat that we'll just spend a minute on it. We don't want to beat the dead horse too much. But the one negative maybe, in the second inning, top of the second of Sunday's game, second and third, one out, Jock Peterson hit a pop-up to first base, obviously frustrated that he wasn't able to deliver at least a sacrifice fly in that situation. And his response was to not do anything. He hit the pop-up, he said a bad word, and he turned and walked back to the dugout. Didn't even make a token jog towards first base. Do you have any strong opinions on that, Vince? I saw, obviously, Nomar had some strong opinions on the broadcast, and I'm wondering if you have any strong opinions.
I mean, nothing too strong. I definitely think you got to at least put the fake jog on. You know, realistically, the ball is not going to fall. And at that point, there wasn't really, it would have been infield fly anyways, but there wasn't really a possibility for them to, you know, drop it on purpose in order to benefit them. But you can't just, you know, get mad and then go back to the dugout. You got to put some kind of effort into it. And I feel like Jock, he usually does a pretty decent job of that. I don't remember there ever being any issues. Because if there was, then he probably would have got benched. Like, guys have been benched in the past for stuff like that. But, you know, I think he's definitely going to start writing him out now, or else, you know, Dave Roberts will bench him in the next instance.
Yeah, I don't believe in hustle for hustle's sake. It's one of the reasons I was kind of an apologist for Manny Machado last year. I think that most of the time, Machado's lack of hustle didn't actually have much potential to cost the team anything. I think back to a few years ago when Jonathan Papelbon attempted murdered Bryce Harper in the dugout after Harper didn't run hard enough in Papelbon's view on a flyout to left, I think it was. And in that situation, I wrote about it at the time, and basically, you know, if Harper sprints his hardest, well, either way, the ball was caught. But let's say the outfielder drops it. If Harper's sprinting his hardest, well, he probably gets thrown out at second, trying to stretch it to a double. If Harper's jogging to first, you know, it was a single no matter what. It was either going to be an out or he was going to be on first base. And the difference with Jock yesterday was if Bell had dropped that, Jock is still out at first because he never even tried to run to first base. So you have to give it at least, I don't think you need to sprint down like you're Chase Utley or Pete Rose, but you do have to be running to first enough that if the ball drops, you end up standing safely on first base. And that's the difference. You know, I don't expect hustle there, but I do expect the minimum amount of effort. And that's what Jock didn't do. And, you know, Robert said afterwards, he talked to Jock about it, and you know, I've never seen Jock do this specific thing. I don't think Jock is much of a hustler, but I don't mind that. But I haven't seen Jock be this much of whatever that was. And so I assume it's a one-time thing, like you said.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about some of the better at-bats. On Saturday, Chris Taylor came up to bat. Joe Musgrove was pitching, and he was not cruising, but he was doing pretty well. And then Taylor put up a really, really good at-bat with two outs and, what was it, 10 or 12 pitches, and he ended up blooping in a single, right?
Taylor?
Yeah.
I
know he ended up on base, and I don't think he worked a walk. I think he ended up getting a base hit to right field. I can't remember exactly. There's so many hits this weekend. It's hard to remember which one was which. But with two outs, Taylor killed a couple birds with one stone. He drove up Musgrove's pitch count. He got himself on base. And at the time, what Joe Davis said was, and he turned the lineup over, which it's a big deal as the number eight hitter. When you come up with two outs, getting yourself on base, just allowing the pitcher to come up and make the third out of the inning so that the next inning can start at the top of the order instead of starting with the automatic out of the pitcher is a huge deal. It's very important for a number eight hitter. So that's what we thought Taylor had done. And then Ryu comes up and works a count and then ends up hitting a double off the wall to drive Taylor in that actually ended up being a really important run at the time. And so by the end of that, Musgrove's pitch count was way up. He ended up having to throw, I think it was 24 pitches after getting two outs in that inning. It was something ridiculous like that. And he went from cruising to out of the game. And it reminded me of a couple years ago. Do you remember the Madison Bumgarner, Clayton Kershaw at bat when Kershaw just kept fouling off pitch after pitch? And he ended up grounding out, I think, but that basically got Bumgarner out of the game. And that was back when Bumgarner was good. And it was a huge deal for Kershaw to do that. And I kind of felt the same way about Chris Taylor's at bat on Saturday.
Yeah, 10-pitch at bat, and he singled to left.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I don't think he hit it super hard. But then I think his next time up, he ended up hitting a double. Yeah, great at bat from Taylor. And then on Sunday, we saw a very similar thing from Max Muncy. Another 10 or 12 pitch at bat, and Chris Archer, who had been struggling in different ways, he walked a bunch of guys, and it helped get the pitch count up. And even though Muncy ended up getting out in that at bat, I think, or did he work a walk?
No, he got on base. He walked.
That's right. He walked that one. But yeah, it was another situation where they drove up Archer's pitch count. And it's one of the things that we talk about a lot on Twitter and here about getting the opposing starter's pitch count up. And sometimes we get some pushback of like, well, they didn't score any runs, so it doesn't matter. But what you saw in that inning in the fifth inning of Sunday's game was a pitcher who was starting to get tired because he had had to work so hard to get through the first four innings. and then the Dodgers were able to put a beating on him and some relievers afterwards. And I know you were impressed with that Muncy at bat and with Muncy in general lately. So what do you want to say about Max?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the numbers on Max, but because I'm going to talk about the offense a little bit more, but Max Muncy has been a pretty big force in the lineup lately. And after struggling a little bit to start the season, he's kind of settled in, and you know, he's not on pace, I don't think, for 35 home runs again, but he's on pace for a better overall offensive season. And you know, he's still doing what he does. He's patient at the plate, and he's basically, you know, what the Dodgers want when they are at the plate. And you know, so breaking down those numbers, this is how the Dodgers, you know, do what we say and get those starting pitchers out the game and you know, work themselves to what they want to do. So the Dodgers are tied for fifth in pitches per plate appearance. They see 3.99 pitches per plate appearance, almost four pitches. You know, they don't swing outside the zone too often. They're second in the league in outside swing rate, which they're right behind the Angels, about 27%. So, you know, of all the pitches outside the zone, the Dodgers swing at only a quarter of those pitches outside the zone. And then when they do hit the ball, they're ranked fourth in hard hit percentage at 41%. So, you know, the Dodgers, they key in on what they want, and they have a plan when they go up there. And, yeah, it doesn't always work out, but for the most part, it's worked out this season, and you can see that in their plan. And we talked about it last time, and I'm sure if we updated the numbers, it'd be around the same, where more than half the games, those pitchers aren't making it past five innings, and they're getting into the bullpen. And – you know, in a 3-4-game series, when you do that in the first game, you know, you're handicapping that team for the rest of the series. So the Dodgers, you know, they're a good force on offense in that sense. And when they're rolling like they were this weekend, you see that they put up more than 10 runs twice. So,
yeah, I actually saw a tweet from Eric Steven yesterday that opposing starting pitchers are averaging 4.86 innings pitched against the Dodgers and have a 5.41 ERA. So the Dodgers are doing the double whammy that obviously go hand in hand of knocking starters out early and scoring a bunch of runs off them. So it's a good combination. And to Muncy specifically, on May 1st, the Dodgers lost to the Giants. It was kind of a low point a little bit of the season. They lost 2-3 to the Giants. Muncy went 0-for-4, two strikeouts in that game. Since then, he's played every game, has 78 plate appearances, and he has a 319 batting average, 397 on base percentage, and 594 slugging percentage. 5 homers and 4 doubles. He's been outstanding. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit. But Muncy turning back into last year's version of Muncy has been huge for the offense. And part of the reason the Dodgers are 14-5 since that loss to the Giants on May 1st.
Yeah, he's definitely gone under the radar a little bit, but we'll make sure to continue to appreciate Max Muncy on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so when we come back, we will talk a little about the left-handed reliever situation and the uncertainty around it. But first, we wanted to remind you to give hotels.com a try. If you need to book hotels, check it out. It's easy to use, and it has great benefits. So really, there's no reason not to use it. Also, remind you to subscribe to Locked On Dodgers on the Himalaya podcast app. Download Himalaya and subscribe today, and we'll be right back. All right, let's take a quick break. For the next minute or two, we're going to talk about SEX. So if you have any KIDS in the CAR, go ahead and plug their EARS for a minute, okay? Hope I spelled all those words right, and I hope you could tell what they meant. Have you ever gone to the barber and wondered why there's a bunch of gray hairs on the ground when they're done cutting your hair? Or have you ever played catch with your son and then you feel like a truck hit you for the next couple days? Or maybe when it comes to the sexy times, are you maybe a little less always ready to go than you were when you were younger? Don't answer those questions out loud, and please do not tweet your answers at us. It's none of our business. In fact, to quote Michael Jackson from back when we were allowed to acknowledge his existence, ain't nobody's business but mine and my baby. That's where BlueChew.com comes in. If you want to increase your performance and get some extra confidence in bed, check out BlueChew. That's blue, as in I bleed Dodger blue, and chew, as in Madison Bumgarner likes to chew out opponents who pimp homers or flip bats or look at him because he's a crybaby and a stunted immaturity, whatever he is. Ugh. Anyway,
Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. But the best part is, Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants a boost in the bedroom, either in quality, quantity, or both. I mean, I obviously don't have any problems in that department. I don't mean to brag, but I do have 3 whole kids. But I have to admit, even I am a little bit intrigued. So anyway, right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code MLB to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring Locked On Dodgers.
And we're back. So before we jump into talking about the bullpen situation, it's time for today's obscure Dodger of the day. Today's obscure former Dodger is Enos Cabell. Are you familiar with Enos Cabell, Vince?
No.
Enos Cabell.
Dino Ebel, though.
Yeah, he and Dino Ebel have almost no similarities. But Enos Cabell played for the Dodgers just for 1.5 seasons. The Astros traded him to the Dodgers in mid-1985. And it was kind of a nothing trade, but Cabell had been a pretty decent player for the Astros and a few other teams in his career. Never great, but he was solid at times. He got MVP votes in 1 year in 1978. Didn't have a great season, but he was okay. And then as a Dodger, he also, you know, was basically nothing special, but he was basically the regular first baseman for a lot of 1986. He was cousins with Kenny Landreau, who played center field for the Dodgers for a lot of the early 1980s. He was also cousins with Dick Davis, who played for the Pirates in the 70s. Played for a lot of teams. I guess the Pirates in 82, that's what I think of him, because my only Dick Davis card, he's on the Pirates, but he played for the Brewers and Phillies. So Enos Cabell came from a baseball family. He was kind of in my mind at the time. He and Art Howe kind of got mixed up in my mind. He was kind of the black Art Howe, or Art Howe was the white Enos Cabell, one way or the other. But you know how kids are. We're dumb. But so that's Enos Cabell. Not much special about him, but he was a former Dodger and he's obscure, which qualifies him to be the obscure former Dodger of the day. So, speaking of former Dodgers, a little bit of news that might pertain to a former Dodger, and maybe not a current or future Dodger. Andrew Toles, we found out, had been working out in Arizona. That is no longer the case. He has gone back home. We still don't have any idea what's going on in his personal life, but he has gone home to spend time with his family, Dave Roberts said. So we may never see Andrew Toles back in a Dodger uniform. Did you want to say something, Vince?
Yeah, we don't know much about it, but, hopefully he can get whatever it is going right in his life. And, baseball obviously comes second in that aspect. So, positive vibes out to Andrew Toles.
Yeah, for sure. The other bit of news we got on Sunday was that Tony Cingrani had a setback in his rehab. He was nearing coming back to the team, and then he felt something in his shoulder. He's going for another MRI. They're gonna look into it. So there's a real possibility now that Tony Cingrani could be out for an extended period of time again, or still, depending on how you look at it. There's a very real possibility that Julio Urias might be suspended for a significant amount of time. We don't know. After Caleb Ferguson's last 2 outings, there's a very real possibility that he might need some time in the minor leagues or something. And after what we've seen from Scott Alexander the last couple of weeks, there's a real possibility that he might be nursing a little injury. So that's four left-handed relievers for the Dodgers, who there's a lot of uncertainty in the bullpen, specifically around left-handed relievers. So we want to talk a little bit about ways the Dodgers might or could possibly address that uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way would be for everyone to just pitch to their ability, and that fixes the problem right there and get healthy. But if that's not possible, the good thing is that none of these guys are necessarily left-handed only specialists.
Scott Alexander kind of is.
But he's a ground ball guy. So, I mean, yes, he is, but he's the most of any of them. But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely – there's 2 months to the deadline. And with this year, the way – when since there's no August deadline, teams have to evaluate themselves a little bit earlier than they did in the past. So teams that maybe aren't so close don't want to give themselves that extra – they don't have that extra month to give themselves to kind of get back into the race. And so, you know, some names to look – think about and that the Dodgers could potentially target, and then they'll end up trading for some obscure left-hander that we don't know, like they did with Cingrani in the first place and Scott Alexander in the first place. But, you know, Sean Doolittle of the Nationals are having a rough season, and he's a possibility. There's Will Smith from the Giants. If Zaidi wants to make a deal, I'm sure he knows some of the guys in the Dodger farm system that he might want over there. And there's Brad Hand from the Indians, who they just gave up a lot for last year, and now they're almost 10 games back of the Twins, who are surprising. So those are three big names to kind of watch out for now. The Dodgers don't really have anyone in the minors that's left-handed. A lot of their guys down there are right-handed, like Gonsolin in May and Stetson Alley and those guys that we saw in the spring. So they got to hope for some health and some better pitching. And if not, they might have to go and find themselves a left-hander.
Yeah, and it's, you know, part of it, part of me thinks it doesn't have to be a left-hander. Just like I said all offseason, they didn't need a right-handed hitting outfielder. What they needed was an outfielder who could hit lefties, and there is a difference. You know, they don't necessarily need a left-handed reliever. They need a reliever who can get lefties out. And so, you know, there's always the possibility of Craig Kimbrel, who, you know, I'm still skeptical about the idea of them being able to sign him because he's a closer and the Dodgers have a closer already. And, you know, we've talked about in the past, Kimbrel is looking for the Hall of Fame and he needs to get more saves to do that. But you threw out the idea before we hit record that, you know, if the Dodgers were to throw a ton of money at him just for the rest of this season, half a season as a setup man wouldn't hurt his Hall of Fame case, probably wouldn't even hurt his value as a closer if he was a dominant setup man. And the Dodgers have the money to throw at somebody if they choose to. And Kimbrel, if he is peak Kimbrel, he's as good as any left-handed reliever against lefties for sure. So yeah, those are some of the possibilities. And, you know, Hand is signed through 2020 with an option for 2021. I'm not sure about Will Smith and Doolittle's contract situations. Have you looked at those?
No, I want to say they both have.
So Doolittle is signed through this year with a team option. And then Smith is signed through
this year. Searching Will Smith didn't help.
What's that?
Said searching for Will Smith didn't help right now because all I got was the genie in Aladdin.
Yeah. So Will Smith is just signed through this year. Doolittle is signed through this year with an option for next year. And Hand is signed through next year with an option for the year after that. And so that will affect the asking price. Would you be nervous about the Dodgers making a trade with the Giants, knowing how well Zaidi knows the Dodgers farm system? Do you see that as a potential sticking point, you know, being worried that he knows more than he should to be able to effectively negotiate with him?
Yeah, right now, probably not, because they are at least 2 or 3 years away from contention. So, I mean, even if they did give up someone and he turns out to be a stud, it's not going to hurt him in the next 2 or 3 years, I would imagine. So I'm not scared about that right now, but it is something, you know, to think about, but it also he also can have guys in the system that he really likes that maybe everyone else is not so high on, and that could work against them in that sense too.
All right, so Vince, your preference, considering what it would take to get them and contracts and everything, of those four people we mentioned, Doolittle, Smith, Hand, or Kimbrel, if the Dodgers get one of them and only one of them, who would you choose?
Since it only costs money, I'll go with Kimbrel. But, I mean, if I have to pick one, I'll go with Kimbrel. Only because it's only going to cost them money.
I respect that. Doolittle is almost 33 years old. Smith is almost 30 years old. And I assume Brad Hand is oldish. He's just turned 29. I think I'd choose Brad Hand because he has the most left on his contract, which also means he'd cost the most to get prospect-wise. But he's also been the most dominant this year and, in a way, has the longest sustained record of success. He wasn't good until 2016, but once he went to the Padres, he became really good, and he's basically been really good ever since then. He also has more of a – he's less of a lefty – you know, he and Doolittle both. Smith is more of a lefty specialist in my mind. Doolittle and Hand, I think, have more – they're more like the Kimbrel type of can get both guys out, both sides out. So I think Hand would be my first choice and then Kimbrel probably. But yeah, so there's a lot of uncertainty. And like you said, you know, the easiest answer is, okay, Ferguson, remember how to pitch. Julio, don't get suspended. And Cingrani, don't be hurt too bad. And Alexander, remember how to pitch. And then everything's fine. But that's a lot of things to hope for. And it seems, with all this uncertainty, that maybe there will be maybe some movement there sometime in the next month or two anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that's it for today. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate all you do, subscribing, telling your friends about it. That's awesome. The Dodgers start a 4-game series with the Mets today at home, starting a decent length homestand. It's Kershaw against DeGrom today. Later this week, we get Buehler against Syndergaard. And then, you know, I think it's Hill against Mats at one point and Ryu against minor leaguer Jason Vargas. Should be a minor leaguer. I read that wrong. So hopefully the Dodgers can, you know, win 3 or 4 of that 4-game series with the Mets. Please remember you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. The most important things you can do to help us grow are to subscribe and download every episode, tell your friends, and rate and review us in iTunes. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I am at Snydog. You can call and leave us a voicemail anytime you want at 323-863-LOCK, L-O-C-K. We are here every weekday morning. We hope you will be here with us. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good one.
Say D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs. They're my Los Angeles. Your Los Angeles. Our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bye!